Welcome back to Ghost in the Valley Podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley, and today I have Warren Ajuice as my guest. He is the author of Evidence of Extraterrestrials. If you get a chance, please pick up this book. It is just fantastic, especially if you're interested in UFOs and cover-ups and alien life forms that might have been collected at the crash sites. And the book is divided into four sections. Part one is modern sightings. Then part two is crashes and landings. Three is military pursuits. And four is government projects. And it is just totally fantastic. I do highly recommend you do pick up this book. And the links to where you can get the book will be in the show notes. I'll be right back with my interview with Warren Ajuice right after these brief messages.
What is it about the unknown that fascinates us so much? Is it for the thrill of it all? Or do we seek proof of life after death? Whatever our reason may be, we find ourselves being drawn in by these places and the bone-chilling tales that they have to offer. Tortured souls cross boundaries to reach out with stories that they want to share with us. There are times we simply hear the echoes of a memory on loop. The question that remains is this: are you open-minded enough to handle it? Dive into the paranormal with DC O'Rourke, your personal guide, as we traverse the globe to dissect haunted places in each and every episode of Hauntingly Yours, a podcast for the paranormal, where the spirits are always waiting.
Okay, today we are talking with Warren Ajuice, author of Evidence of Extraterrestrials, Over 40 Cases Prove Aliens Have Visited the Earth. Is this your first novel, Warren?
Yeah, it's my first nonfiction book, it is.
I want to thank you for being on my show.
I'm glad to be here, thank you.
Just to start, how old were you when you started getting interested in extraterrestrials?
Well, the first book I've read was by Jim Mars. It was called, it's called Alien Agenda. It's a fantastic book, and I guess I was around 14 back then. And after reading that book, basically it opened my eyes, and ever since then I've been fascinated by the UFO phenomenon, and not just by the concept of aliens, but also the technology which they have, and the existential questions which their existence poses on human life as well.
Oh, cool, because sometimes, you know, like myself, I was really, I shouldn't say like a non-believer, but because I've always believed in ghosts and spirits, and I don't think I really connected UFOs and aliens to like the paranormal.
Yeah.
I started to from in 1994, but we'll get to that. But, you know, with UFOs, I mean, did you like separate UFOs from extraterrestrials, or did you connect the two?
At first, here's the thing. When I first started writing the book, I sort of told myself that I would write it as unbiased and as objective as I possibly could. So I went with the idea of trying to disprove the cases rather than trying to prove that the cases are extraterrestrial in origin. But then as you look at certain cases, UFOs, and their characteristics are quite, they could not have been rather manufactured here on Earth. Which leaves us with the only hypothesis that they are extraterrestrial. So when we look at the UFO phenomenon, I guess the first point that we should leave at is trying to see if the object could be man-made. Now, if the object has certain characteristics which defy the laws of physics or aerodynamics, then that creates this idea and this theory that the object could be extraterrestrial. So to answer your question, my intention was to disprove the cases first. And if the cases held credible evidence and credible information, then that is when I would consider that these UFOs could be extraterrestrial.
But I see you started out with Aurora in 1897, I believe it was.
Exactly, yes.
I don't know too much about that case. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So to give the listeners a brief overview, my book is divided into four sections. The first section deals with general UFO sightings. The second section deals with crashes and landings. The third section deals with military pursuits. So cases in which the military have pursued jets to chase UFOs. And the final section is about government projects, such as Project Blue Book. Now, the Aurora crash, it perhaps, when it comes to crashes, many people mention Roswell. But to me, the Aurora crash is even more significant than Roswell and holds more evidence than Roswell crash. So many people overlook this case. But if we want to see a case in which has so much evidence, which proves that the object could be extraterrestrial in origin, then the Aurora crash is an amazing place to start. So the Aurora crash, it's happened in April of 1897. So we're saying over 100 years ago. And what happened is that it was around April, and there was a local judge, and on his property he had this windmill. And in the early hours of the morning, he heard a loud crash. And when he got out of his house to see what had happened, he saw a lot of scattered metallic fragments all over the property. Naturally, a lot of people heard the crash, and they too went out to see what was happening. Well, all the witnesses stated that they had seen metallic fragments, and that was consistent with all the witness reports. But then there were other witnesses who said they saw a body, a small body, a humanoid body. So we have these two theories. And there's a lot of information which corroborates the theory that they found an alien body. First of all, Aurora, Texas, they're very religious people. So on the day of the crash, on the local newspaper, they released a memorial which stated that they were going to hold a funeral for the humanoid body. And so they held a burial. And apart from the mass, from the funeral mass, they also buried the human body. The humanoid body. Along with the humanoid body, they also buried the metallic fragments. So they went to the Aurora local cemetery. They had a designated grave, which had a flying disc as a marker. And in this grave, they put the humanoid body and the metallic fragments. Now, we're talking 2007-ish. Well, the investigation happened in 1973. MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network, they started an investigation into the Aurora crash. And what they did is that they went to the gravesite with metal detectors. And when they put the metal detector above the grave, the detector went off, naturally indicating that there were metallic fragments buried in the grave. As they were getting more information about the case, the cemetery withdrew rather all of their access, so they could not access the cemetery anymore. The following day, when they revisited the grave, not only did the metal detector not pick up any signal, but they saw a 3-inch pipe going inside the grave, indicating that whatever was buried in the grave was no longer there. I come to the conclusion that since they were coming closer and closer to the truth, whatever was buried there was misplaced elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, in this case, it's very rich in detail. And although it happened 100 years ago, and we do not have first-hand witness statements, the evidence which we do have, it's very interesting, because we cannot prove 100% that whatever crashed was extraterrestrial in origin, but we can also see that something which is unconventional was buried and did actually crash. And one last final point that I will make in the Aurora crash is that a portion of the metallic fragments from the disc which had crashed was buried in a well which the local judge had on his property. Now, years down the line, when the judge moved out and the new family came in, they realized that the water in the well was radioactive. And as a result, the family, the husband, he started developing groits and cysts, as well as arthritis. So whatever was placed in the well was radioactive in nature. So that's an interesting point as well.
That is interesting. Kind of relates a little bit with the Roswell crash. Was there a body or?
Yeah.
Some people say it was a living alien.
Yes, yes.
And I like what you said before. I listened to a couple other podcasts you were on. You deal with facts.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're sitting around a campfire and then somebody says something, by the time it gets back to you, it's not what you said, you know.
Uh-huh. And going back to the Roswell case, as you said, like I said, I like to focus on the evidence, because with the UFO phenomenon, if you don't present the evidence, then many people will take it with a pinch of salt. And that's absolutely something which I do not like, because this phenomenon is completely scientific. And going back to the Roswell case, there's this idea, perhaps, let's call it an idea, that their alien bodies were found. And here's the thing. Nowadays, everything with consumerism, you need to sell a story. You need to make it interesting. So let's add the idea that alien bodies were recovered. But do I personally believe that alien bodies were recovered? The answer is no, because there's no evidence for that. In actual fact, I would say that no alien bodies were recovered, because if someone would have located the alien bodies, it would have been the rancher who located the metallic fragments, who located the flying disc. So I believe that's naturally when you have a story such as the Roswell case, people add on details to make it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, in this case, people do get carried away with certain details. But I always want to focus on the facts.
Yeah, around 20 years ago, I was in St. Petersburg, Florida, during 9/11.
Yeah.
But I was down visiting my sister-in-law in Florida. And right next to her lived the old gentleman. He was retired Air Force. And what was interesting was he worked at Roswell.
Oh, okay.
During this time. And what he told me, I mean, he couldn't tell me everything, which is still unbelievably classified.
Yeah, it's classified.
What he told me was, you know, there was a crash, and they did collect the, what did crash, the unidentified material or metals that was collected, and that they were sent to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, what he told me, I asked him, well, what about any type of alien life form? Or and he says he could not comment on that. What I thought was interesting was, even though he was retired, and it's been many years since he's been in the Air Force.
Yes, yes.
The Air Force was still taking care of him.
Yeah, that's what's so amazing, that these people who are involved in this infamous case, they're still subject to confidentiality. And certain things they still cannot comment on, even though such a long time has passed.
Right. And I even asked him, I said, you can't answer me if there was aliens involved or dead or alive or pieces or... He said, no, if I told you what I actually knew, I'd have to kill you. And I started laughing. Yeah. He was dead serious. When he looked right, you know, I was like, kind of, okay.
Yeah. And as to add on what you said, because many people will say, it's not serious. Why would they kill him? But that's so true, because if we look at Bob Lazar, who worked at Area 51, they had attempted to take his life on so many occasions because he was talking about this stuff. He was disclosing this information. So when people come out and say, listen, I have information, and they're fearing for their lives, it's absolutely true. We have cases in which this has happened. So I'm really not surprised that that was his response.
Right. And, you know, and I seen this since I was, I got involved with the UFOs since 1994, that how true that is, that a lot of these cases kind of just like connect together.
Yeah.
And always leads back to one thing, and it's a cover up.
Definitely.
And what I find interesting is, you know, even though he was retired from the Air Force was there at least twice a week, got his groceries, put gas in his car. I mean, where do you work? Did they come and do that for you?
Exactly. Exactly.
I did like what you say, you know, if you're interested into it, like a case, you know, like do your own investigations on that.
Yes.
You know, be very careful because what's classified and declassified, because I've had a few instances happen to me where I have experience on saying that, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. You don't want to tread on dangerous things, I suppose.
Because we were talking before I started recording here, is if you knew about the UFOs over Trumbull County, Ohio, and it happened in 1994, and that's when I started actually kind of believing in UFOs, is because it happened over my county, and you can look it up on YouTube or Google it. You had over 10 law enforcement agencies chasing this thing from Ohio to Pennsylvania, over 50 miles, and over 14 officers that were chasing this. And you had the news there, TV, newspaper were there. I know a couple of the officers from two of the departments that chased this thing. So I do know that it was real what they chased.
Yeah.
But why is it that the very next day, this happened on December 14th, 1994, the very next day, all these officers, I mean, from state patrol to city police, to state police, were told the next day that it was a weather balloon. Now, my buddy of mine that was on the police force at the time says he knows weather balloons. He knows how they travel. And what, have you ever seen a weather balloon that can go 6,000 miles an hour?
Yeah.
22 miles an hour too. And what I thought was interesting was it kind of played with them, you know, during this chase. You know, in other words, he got so far ahead they couldn't keep up. Then it would sit and wait for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so what I'm getting to is, I think they're so much more advanced than us.
Definitely.
And I think in your book, you'd probably in there that they were here long before. I mean.
Yeah. And that's interesting. What you noted was that they were playing with them. And that's a recurring theme in UFO cases where the military scrambles jets. That's a recurring theme where the being, whoever is piloting these crafts, they possess spatial awareness. They are aware of the aircrafts who are pursuing them. So then there's this like this cat and mouse chase, which I find so fascinating because they're literally demonstrating how superior they are to any terrestrial aircraft which we have.
Right. When I did a previous episode on updating the UFOs cases in the States, that I actually got a phone call from a pilot that actually piloted one of these. I couldn't use his name because it's still classified.
Yeah,
but he wanted to point out a couple of my statements in the interview that I had wrong. Okay, I didn't know. I'm just putting out there what I'm reading that was released through the government.
Yeah.
You know, and he says, no, he says, I was there. So I chased it. He said, even with our technology and going like Mach 4.
Yes.
We couldn't lock onto it.
Yes.
It was in front of us, above us, below us.
Mm-hmm.
How could something that's 10,000 feet drop down to 20 feet above sea level?
Exactly. And what you're saying is literally so similar to the Tic Tac UFO, which was the footage was recently declassified, because the object, it literally dropped from 28,000 feet to sea level in just 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no human could ever withstand those G-forces. They would literally turn into paste.
That's exactly what he said, yeah.
which is fascinating. And even when, going back to the Tic Tac UFO, even when the object dropped to sea level, there was patrolling below the surface. And they registered that an identified object, which is twice as fast as the Navy's fastest submarine. So here we're seeing a characteristic which I refer to as transmedium traveling. A foe is able to travel in different mediums, such as the atmosphere, and in this case, the ocean as well. And in both mediums, it is outperforming terrestrial vehicles, which I find fascinating.
Right. I was asking him, do you think, could have taken your jets out? You know, wasn't looking at it as into a combat mission.
Yeah.
It just seemed like it was, like, as in his words, it was playing with them. Yes. So at any given point, he says, if it wanted to probably take us out, it probably could have. And mm-hmm. when I contacted the base, I was basically told to drop it.
Yes. And once again, like I said before, we're hearing about this recurring theme, which is the UFO playing with them. And a similar case which I've researched was the Tehran incident. Mm-hmm. So in Iran, there was this UFO, and when the military jets were scrambled, the UFO literally malfunctioned their fighter jet. And the fighter jet tried to pursue the UFO. The fighter jet lost all of its communication with the base, and at one point they even tried to launch a missile towards the UFO, but the system malfunctioned once again. So it's like a cat and mouse chase, genuinely.
Is that in your book, The Tehran?
Yeah, it is, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting because in that encounter proves just how, well, there are many cases which prove this, but this case particular proves just how futile we are, or rather the technology which the military has, how futile they are. And in this case, the military, each time the fighter jets tried to break down the distance, it would lose all of its communication with the base. It's just amazing. Excellent proof, which shows how serious the subject is. This is not something that you can go to a bar and tell your friends about, you know?
Yeah, don't you think that maybe when you do a cover-up, though, it kind of fuels the fire?
Yes. Well, here's the thing. When you look at a cover-up, it depends how it's made. If we look at the Roswell case, the cover-up was so horribly done that it did fuel people and it did fuel the people's interest. But if we look at other incidents, the cover-up, it's done immediately, and it doesn't give people the time to even do their research. And each time you try to access documents, so the Freedom of Information Act, the access is denied. Or even if you do get these documents, they're completely blacked out, except for a few sentences, which you can't get anything out of anyway.
Right. Because, you know, there's another case that happened just a county over from me in Portage County. And the movie Close Encounters was made off of this incident in Portage County. That happened in 1966. The incident that happened there was almost the same thing. You know, these officers were chasing a UFO from Portage County to almost Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is almost 85 miles. And what I thought was kind of sad in a way is the one police officer was, you know, he lost his job.
Yeah.
Humiliated, lost his marriage, eventually had to get a job in the coal mines. And I just thought, you know, looking at that incident in 1966, where Project Blue Book was involved in that case, how the similarities they referred to as a weather balloon.
Yeah.
Almost the same situation that happened in 1994, 30 years later.
Yeah. And the weather balloon explanation is used, I guess, in, I would say, 90% of the cases I cover, genuinely, which is, and if you compare the characteristics of a weather balloon to the maneuvers which these UFOs carry out, they're not close at all. They're not similar at all.
Listen to everybody's stories. I'm not going to call them crazy because, you know, I wasn't there.
Of course, exactly. And what's funny is that the same people who call these people crazy, when they start reading about this phenomenon, they go with this preconceived idea, with this preconceived notion that these people are crazy. They don't go into it with an open mind. So they don't even give them the chance, you know?
Right, exactly. And now what I've been looking at is the spike in cases with UFO sightings since the landing of the moon to the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder if there's a connection with the fact that people, you know, when when the landing of the moon was broadcasted, I guess many people were questioning if the astronauts had seen anything in the sky as they were in space. Maybe people were asking if the astronauts had seen something, so maybe they were more aware that UFOs could be real. And I wonder if the increase in sightings is because people started considering that these extraterrestrials do actually exist.
Like you say, the proof, you know, and so I do go by the proof and try to get the facts, you know, other than just somebody heard somebody say something from somebody else, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
And by the time you get the story, it's already watered down to the fact that
it's
completely different than the original story.
Yeah.
And I find that true even with paranormal. When I go into different places that are haunted or spirits, 9 times out of 10, it's not a spirit.
Exactly.
And I think that what Project Blue Book was all about was they weren't there to say UFOs existed. They were there to say they didn't exist.
Definitely not. And going back to what you said, where 9 out of 10, there's a natural explanation. That is true, but we cannot dismiss that one event. And that's what many people do, that they see that the majority of these sightings are a hoax. So they dismiss the small percentage which are authentic. And Project Blue Book, what I find interesting about Project Blue Book is that they investigated a total of 12,600 cases, somewhere in that ballpark, right? Mm-hmm. And 700 of those cases remain unexplained. And the majority of the explanations they used for the 12,000 sightings were the weather balloon phenomenon. It was a natural phenomenon. It was a military aircraft, or it was a hoax. So these four explanations were the ones which were widely used. But none of these four explanations could explain the 700 sightings, which remain unexplained to this day. So my question that I ask in this book, is that why was Project Blue Book terminated when 700 cases are unexplained? And are these cases unexplained, or are they simply only explainable by the extraterrestrial hypothesis? Because it could be, it very well is the case that these cases can be explained by the extraterrestrial hypothesis, which means that the UFOs which were witnessed are interplanetary in origin. But naturally, Project Blue Book or the Air Force cannot say that. So what do they say? They say that they don't have enough information, and so the case remains unexplained.
Right, and even if you had the facts to prove your point, they didn't want those facts released.
And definitely, and that's a recurring theme once again, that all of these cases, there's so much evidence which proves that these UFOs are interplanetary. And yet, it's astounding that the Air Force does not even take it into consideration.
Right, because there is, like getting back to that 1966 incident in Portage County, there were photographs taken by these officers of the craft that were not released. You know, there were pictures taken. And as same as my friend that was on the police force in 1994, there are pictures taken that are not released. And this is how many years later? This is 2021.
Yeah, that's such a long time ago.
And they still can't come on the show and talk about it. I find that very odd.
If they do start talking about it, they're not only putting their lives and their careers in jeopardy, but also their families, you know.
So in your book, is there going to be a book too?
I'm certainly working on it, but it's still in the early stages. With this book, it was such a long process because all the information which I use in the book, it's completely from declassified projects. It's not from Wikipedia, you know, because the things that you find on Wikipedia can be amazing and so inaccurate. Mm-hmm. So it takes a long time to actually acquire the documents, acquire the information, double checking the information. So I'm definitely working on other projects, and I'm definitely going to keep publishing information on the UFO phenomenon, but it's still in the early stages of it.
Because it seems like, you know, the sightings have increased.
Yeah, and people are more aware of it. And now that the Pentagon has actually come out and say that UFOs exist and we caught them on footage, people are more aware of it, and they're not scared to make a report nowadays. They don't think that they're going to get ridiculed because the Pentagon said that they exist.
Right, you know, because before you had some, like President Kennedy was looking into that, you know, Project Blue Book, and Robert Kennedy and Hillary Clinton and Jimmy Carter. And I mean, there's so many that want to say something, but they can't say it.
And interestingly, I cover Jimmy Carter's UFO sighting in the book as well. And that's before the presidential race, he said that he would disclose all the information on the UFO phenomenon. But when he did get elected, he naturally did not do that because this information is above the president.
And people still can't talk about it. Yeah. So in closing, where can they find your book and they get a hold of you?
So you can find my book on Amazon. If there are any listeners in Europe, it's on Book Depository as well. And anywhere else where you can get your book, and Kindle as well. And you can find me on Facebook, or you can get in touch with me directly via email. My email is wajuice67@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from anyone who wants to contact me.
Again, that book is Evidence of Extraterrestrials, Over 40 Cases Prove Aliens Have Visited Earth. Highly recommend that you do pick up this book and give support to Warren Ajuice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Warren. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure, and it was one of the most enjoyable interviews I've had. So thank you for that.
Thank you. And I really look forward to getting this book.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
I want to thank Warren Ajuice for his time. And since my conversation with Warren Ajuice, there has been some updated information from the Pentagon. And here is some of that information. The United States of Defense, also known as the DOD, announced on May 3rd that it is launching a formal evaluation into the Pentagon's actions on what the military calls unidentified aerial phenomena, also known as UAP. The Office of the DOD Inspector General issued a memo announcing the plan and stated that it would audit how the offices of the Secretary of Defense, Military Services, Combatant Commands, Combat Support Agencies, Defense Agencies, and the military criminal investigative organizations have responded to UFO sightings. The objective of this evaluation is to determine the extent of which the DOD has taken actions regarding unidentified aerial phenomena. We may revise the objective as the evaluation proceeds, and we will consider suggestions from management for additional or revised objective. The memo also sought a point of contact. The point of contact should be a government employee or a military service member, a GS-15 pay band equivalent, or the military equivalent, read the memo. Last year in August, the Pentagon had created a task force to study UAP occurrences. In a release, the Pentagon had said that the task force was established to improve its understanding and origins of UAPs. The mission of the task force is to detect, analyze, and catalog UAPs that could potentially pose a threat to United States national security, stated the release. In April this year, the Pentagon had confirmed the authenticity of leaked videos and photos showing objects described as a sphere, an acorn, and metallic blimp. As reported by CNN, a spokesperson said the videos and photos showing these objects were taken by United States Naval personnel. Traditionally, the Inspector General probes allegations of wrongdoing or evaluates how the Pentagon is handling sensitive charged issues. I sent this report to Warren Ajuice, and here's Warren Ajuice's response to this memo. Warren Ajuice states, "It will certainly be interesting to see how the Secretary of Defense has been investigating the UFO phenomenon. Naturally, with the declassification of three footages in 2017, the FLIR-1, the Gimbal, and Go Fast, the DoD is most certainly investigating these sightings. This report will represent the transition of how the UFO phenomenon is perceived by the Secretary of Defense. In the past, each time there was a sighting, it was more often than not immediately dismissed and general explanation was provided to the public. Nowadays, we see Pentagon officials coming out that they have been investigating UFO sightings and that this is a serious matter. To me, this is what disclosure is. We have to keep in mind that in 2017, when the Pentagon confirmed the authenticity of the three footages, they indirectly confirmed not only the existence of UFOs, but also the fact that these objects are more probably extraterrestrial in origin. When we look at the characteristics and abilities of the aircraft in the footages, from the instantaneous acceleration that would turn any human being into paste, to the anti-gravity propulsion system, the aircrafts are undoubtedly extraterrestrial in origin. This report will hopefully bring to light the authorities' correct knowledge and understanding of how these objects operate and if we have any knowledge of their origins." In conclusion, after looking at the report, the memos from the Pentagon, and sitting back and thinking about this, wondering to myself, how would the public honestly deal with a extraterrestrial in their backyard on any given day? Really? I don't think we could. I really don't. I think there's a lot of reasoning to why the Pentagon only releases what they feel we can handle. I mean, think about last year during the pandemic, and there was a toilet paper crisis, for crying out loud. Look at the people that fought in parking lots, and their life was upended because they couldn't get toilet paper, paper towels. You know, and then I was thinking, you know, China has the capability to melt U.S. power grids with an EMP missile. Think about that. And we have the same weapon being created through Boeing. Because, you know, Boeing is currently also working on a counter-electronics high-powered microwave advanced missile project called CHAMP. It is a joint concept technology led by the United States Air Force Research Laboratory at the Kirkland Air Force Base to develop an air-launched directed energy weapon capable of incapacitating or damaging electronic systems by means of an EMP. You know, and I was thinking, how would you handle if all your electronic systems were shut down by these EMP missiles? No refrigerator, no microwave, no electronic devices such as iPhones, iPads, computers, purification systems, and water processing plants. Life as you know it would come to a halt. And that is far more dangerous than not having toilet paper. Now, I look at a lot of these instances with these pilots and what happened in 1966 in Portage County, Ohio, in 1994 in Trumbull County, Ohio, and numerous other involvements with a UFO, where they took out the electronic systems of the cruisers, the radios, flashlights, batteries. Are these UFOs operating on the same type of technology that a EMP would, as an EMP missile? You know, I was just thinking about that. If these UFOs are extraterrestrial, and they're also capable of doing, you know, mass damage to our power grids and our defense system, then they're way more advanced than we are. Way more advanced. So how would you handle it? How would you handle the truth coming from the Pentagon? Would you dismiss it, as a lot of people have dismissed the virus? Would you dismiss it as another lie? Interested in hearing your thoughts. And I will have other programs coming up in the fall on the anniversary of the Berkshires UFO that was broadcast on Netflix last year. I plan on traveling to the Berkshire, so I hope to do some reports from the area. I highly encourage you to pick up Warren Ajuice's book, Evidence of Extraterrestrials, The link is at the bottom of this podcast, Ghost in the Valley Podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Thank you.